Love, I tell you, love is that confidence. Love is what you give your children. You know, love is an incredible thing, and we don't know love like we should. We always talk about, I have unconditional love. Unconditional love is, we don't even know it, because if a person stops stimulating us, we stop loving them. You're not interesting to talk to anymore. Goodbye. But that real love, that love that sometimes is difficult, difficult to have, that's that love. And that's a confidence builder. Thank you. That was very long.
Now for one little question.
Okay. Yes.
On this special Valentine's Day episode of Black Girl Galaxy, I will be exploring the topic of Black love with my guest, Nadine Thompson, a marriage and family therapist out of Mississauga, Ontario. We talk about the importance of familial love, how being Black can influence your relationship role models, the world of online dating and dating in a pandemic, and lastly, we talk about how, as Black women, we can achieve and sustain healthy relationships. I am super excited to get into this episode, so without further ado, let's take off.
Kicking off the Black Girl Galaxy in 3, 2, 1, blast off.
So before I talk to Nadine, I wanted to spend a few moments talking about what I perceive to be Black love. I think most people might think that Black love is simply a romantic relationship between two or more Black people, but I like to think of it as more than that. I think that because throughout history Black people have experienced and are still currently experiencing things like subjugation, enslavement, and systemic racism, there has been a coordinated effort to rob Black people of joy, of happiness, and of love. To me, Black love is an act of resistance to these oppressions. Black love is love for ourselves, our melanin, our future, our people, our culture, and it's the type of love that sees past stereotypes, societal beliefs, and lies used to paint over Black individualism. Falling in Black love means understanding that you are a whole person, a person who deserves to be happy and loved, not despite of your skin color, but because of it, because it is a crucial part of who you are. Black love is love for your family, understanding your history, and having love for yourself. It doesn't mean that the partners in any relationship are both Black. It means that the people in the relationship see one another as whole individuals worthy and deserving of love. It is about respect for ourselves, one another, and respect for our community and history. So for the purposes of this episode, Nadine and I primarily focus on familial relationships and romantic relationships, but as I just described, Black love is so much more than that. But given that this is a day of romantic love and selling Hallmark cards and flowers, I thought we would use this time to focus our conversation on both those aspects, being romantic and familial love. So enough rambling, let's give Nadine a call. Hello, hello, Nadine.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and I'm super excited to have you on to talk all about Black love and Black women and relationships and all the good stuff, since it is, in fact, Valentine's Day when this episode is going to be released. So no other timing seemed appropriate to talk to you and have you share some knowledge with my listeners.
I am all about a Valentine's Day. I think it's an exciting time for our relationships. So I'm looking forward to it as well. I think this is an excellent opportunity to share with our Black women, how do we achieve and maintain love?
Yeah, I think so too. A great time for love, a great time for florists, for flower sales. So before we sort of jump into the episode and hear all of the great things you have to share with us, why don't you tell everyone listening a bit more about your practice and about yourself?
Oh, well, I'm a marriage and family therapist, and the practice is Metanoeo Counseling Services. You can look me up on Psychology Today, which is how I believe we have been found.
Yes, I did creep you on Psychology Today, which is how I found your info.
It's actually great. It's a wonderful space. And, you know, so just things that we do within the practices, more so couples and marriage counseling and families and individuals. We deal with a variety of different issues that come up, anywhere from conflict resolution and anxiety, depression, other mental health issues that may also arise, and whatever relationship issues you might have as well. Our practice is varied, and we're just dealing with it from more of a systemic perspective, where we're not just looking at the individual, but we're looking at all of the other things that influence that individual's life.
Yeah, and I think that that's like a really great segue into some of the things that I'm hoping to talk about today, which is how does your family, and more specifically thinking about things that especially relate to the Black family, like how does your family structure and your upbringing affect the way that you approach relationships, and how have you seen this play out in some of the couples that you may have talked to or individuals that you may have talked to and have counseled?
It's a good question. And I think that it's one that is worthy of a great deal of discussion. If we're talking about that, how these things come up into our different relationships, right? What is the modeling? You know, how does your family generally form attachments? How are they managing conflict? All of those particular pieces play into the way in which we approach our relationships. So let's say, for instance, now, growing up, I can say for sure, I grew up in a home, mind you, I grew up in New York, but my parents are from Caribbean background. So as we experience those things growing up, I can remember most of my relationships that I observed were like my mother was married and she only had one person. She never remarried. She never dated, nothing. Mm-hmm. She just raised us, so to speak. And with all of my aunts and so forth, my uncles, the same thing. They had one main relationship. They may have had some side relationships or what have you, but they weren't the primary relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up thinking it's a once and done kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
You don't get another chance at it. So you're approaching that relationship with those ideals in mind, like this is my forever.
Yeah. And I can actually echo some of your points in that, you know, I'm Nigerian and my parents, again, I think they met when they were like 5 years old. So this is like a love story set in stone. So they've been together for all of my life, at least. And mm-hmm. I saw them, you know, really work hard at maintaining that relationship. Obviously, there are points in time where couples have problems, but the ultimate goal was to ensure that that relationship was intact. And even in the Nigerian community, one thing that was almost taboo was this idea of divorce. So this partnership, or in my mind, growing up, a relationship was, it is a one-stop shop. So if you get it wrong, too bad. You sort of have to stick through bad marriages. And I would see, you know, family friends and aunts and people who are in these relationships. And I was kind of like, are you super happy here? Like, are you, I don't know if you like your husband, like, you know, these observations, but in my mind, it's like, well, sucks to suck. You just sort of have to stick it out. But now, obviously, you know, growing up a little bit, I'm still a child at heart, but growing up a little bit, I understand that that's for sure something that is just like a part of Nigerian culture. Like it's almost taboo to get a divorce. And I think that could actually influence your thinking, or at least my thinking. I'm not married now, but getting married and feeling like, even if the relationship isn't everything that I'd hoped it would be, or isn't as fulfilling as I want it to be, there isn't really an option. And that might be a similar story for people who come from, you know, Nigerian, African, or Caribbean descent.
Of course, right? And it plays into the way in which we approach those relationships, right? So when we're thinking about trust and we're thinking about how we're attaching to these individuals, we're looking at the long haul. We're not exploring. We're not thinking about, well, you know, it's a possibility that this may not work out, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it has a lot to do with the way in which it shapes our expectations about what marriage or long-term relationships should look like, right?
Yeah, and that kind of ties in nicely to something that we talked about before recording, which was, you know, looking for relationship role models. And I think specifically in the Black community, if we're thinking about the common types of relationships, or, you know, being African and Caribbean, the common types of formations that we see, you know, how does our origins or being Black sort of affect the way that we select our relationship role models, whether they come from our immediate environment or if they come from, you know, just culture and TV, media, society?
I think that it's all, like you said, very interrelated. Because if I'm going back again, I'm using myself as a model as we're going through this, right? If I'm going back and I'm looking at, you know, even myself, friends, you know, your particular story, these values, right? Those cultural values, cultural norms, they become our core beliefs. It becomes a part of who we are. And if you've ever seen Inside Out, the Disney movie, you'll see how important those core beliefs are to the way in which we govern ourselves and how our emotions are played out and so forth. So it's important to see and understand, what about those core beliefs am I bringing into that next step? And then let's be quite honest, being Black in North America is a very different space, right? Because we do have racism that is so rampant. It may be an undercurrent, but it still exists. And so that affects the opportunities that a lot of Black people have in order to go forward and you know, better themselves. And a lot of them, they came here with $5 and a dream.
Yeah.
I know from, you know what I mean? I know from when we go, say, for instance, there was a running joke in New York at the time, back in the day when In Living Color used to exist. You come from a Jamaican family, they have 10 jobs. And, you know, everyone laughed. They thought that was the most hilarious thing. But I was like, yo, but that's true.
What's the matter with her?
She in Limbo.
In Limbo, I don't see her working. What are you talking about, labor? How many jobs you got?
One.
One job? One job, and you call that labor? Get up and help out with the other patients.
No, I want you.
Up you go, Fatty Pie. Come on, Fatty Pie. Step up.
What's she supposed to have to leave me? Something, girl. The day I gave birth to your lazy husband, Byron, my son, I was working 6 jobs, no man. I was a wedding photographer, meet-a-maid, shoe salesman, swimming instructor, sushi chef, and taking a bar exam, all while delivering his lazy fetus. Oh. Get up now, you're fine.
I think I better lie down.
Lying down, that's what got you here in the first place, you lazy rabbit.
There has been a long-standing coordinated effort to separate Black families dating back to slavery. Black people were not seen as whole people, rather as machinery used to economically benefit white men and women. Black families were ripped apart and separated. After the abolishment of slavery, more systems were put in place to separate Black families, including the bond and bail system, incarceration, the child welfare system, and the criminalization of poverty. Black men were taken from their homes. Black families for decades faced oppressions, and thus the ability to pass on traditions highlighting familial love and emotional expression have been greatly impacted. As we know, slavery did exist in Canada from 1671 to 1834, and that systemic racism has impacted original Black settlers as well as immigrants from all around the world. Many Black people in Canada are a part of a diaspora, and they immigrated here with the hopes of a better life. However, these individuals were often placed in poorer communities, excluded from job opportunities, and forced to start their careers all over again. This placed immense stress on Black families whose parents were often doing their best just to make ends meet. And as a result, family time, crucial for bonding, was sacrificed. Of course, this is not the story of every Black family, but it could be because of the systemic pressures Black people face. If people are focusing on their basic needs like food, housing, and income, oftentimes things like love and happiness have been sacrificed. This is why it's important to understand history, how dominant groups have attempted to rob us of our joy and our happiness, and have threatened Black love. We have to ensure that we do not internalize the societal projections of who we are, what we can be, and the way that we can show each other love.
they for sure have 10 jobs.
Yeah, they do. They always have a side hustle. There's always things going on. So when you look at the Black family on a whole, and let's say even coming to Canada, I know that there's been a big migration here, not just from Africa, not just from the Caribbean, right? From all over, but they came here with their $5 and a dream. But that dream wasn't like, you know, they didn't come in and just land in corporate America. They came and they had to work their way through many of these challenges, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, they had to start over. So say for instance, now you know, because of the way that, I'm gonna say North America, because I think it's a problem with North America, you come from another country, whether you have your degree or not, it's not recognized here. And yeah, so you have to start again. So many of them have to borrow money to go to school and to, you know, and they're still trying to raise their families. They've already started their families. So what time do they really have? What time are you able to pour into them at this point in time, right? It's not the same as white Americans or white Canadians. They've been here forever. They finished their schooling and they've started their families and so forth. A lot of our families have had to work jobs where they're not home all the time. They're not able to go to, you know, parents' night. I also worked for the TDSB, and it was interesting to see how many Black parents turn out for parents' night. It's actually heart-wrenching, right? When you actually see it, and the kids whose parents really need to be there, they're not there. And not because they don't want to be there, but they can't. They have a job.
They're doing other things to provide.
That's right. So when you're looking at that in the big scope of it, I know we're going here, there, and everywhere, but those socioeconomic barriers for our parents, they cut into meaningful time with our families, right? And then our core beliefs are being shaped by, like you said, the media, the books we read, people that were around. And let's be honest, if you've migrated here and you don't have a lot of money, where do you live, right? Where are you going
live in
to
the
stay?
Poorer communities,
right? And so living in those spaces, hopelessness breeds hopelessness. And so when you're growing up in that, and even though your parents may have some ideals, you're busy forming friendships and alliances with people whose values may not mirror that of the people in your home. Just some interesting things to think about in terms of how does that affect the way that we select and ship role models? Because then now what do we do, right? We're gonna think that, hey, going to work, we gotta work. Your parents never showed up to your sports events. They never showed up to parents' night or, you know, your concerts or what have you. You know, they didn't take a trip to take you, you know, I don't know, anywhere.
Yeah.
It's so interesting how you hear a lot of, like, some of the people, I've never been anywhere. What do you mean? What do you mean? I don't understand. What do you mean you've never been anywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never gone anywhere. I've never done anything with my family. You know, we sometimes on Christmas or holidays, we eat dinner together. Mm-hmm. I have to highlight the importance of that dinner table. The dinner table conversation is key. That's where our values are shaped and formed. And as you said, going back to Nigeria and to Africa and those places, storytelling was a huge part of our culture that was taken away from us during colonialism, right? So how do we impart that wisdom and knowledge to the people we love and care about when we don't have time for them?
Yeah, and I think you brought up a really great point around this idea of socioeconomic status and how that affects so many aspects of your life, where you live, the food you eat, you know, whether or not your parents can show up for a parent-teacher night. And I think this idea of at least thinking about the Nigerian experience or some of the Nigerian people that I've known, it's definitely true that you end up naturally living in areas that are a bit more economically challenged because, you know, you're coming from a new country. My dad likes to tell the story about, I used to clean fridges. I used to go to people's houses and clean fridges. And
yes, yes.
And it's like a point of pride for a lot of, you know, immigrants that they were able to come here and, like, you know, pull themselves up, quote unquote, by the bootstraps and create a life for their family and to provide them with a better future. But exactly like you said, you can't really be what you can't see. So if your parents are constantly working, if they're, you know, out of the house, maybe even perhaps your ideas of what a relationship should be, you're not really seeing that reflected in, you know, the way that your parents interact, right? Like, then you can't really form those critical points around, you know, what do I value? What does a healthy relationship look like? And those are the things that you need to almost compare, right? Like, when you actually get into a relationship, like, how does this tie back to what I grew up seeing? Or how does this sort of relate to what my core values are in a relationship, in building a family?
Mm-hmm. And then you stuck with those unspoken family to say, well, it is what it is. You know, my dad cheats, or, you know, my mom doesn't have time for me because, you know, she's got to work or whatever the case is. Or, you know, the most important thing is school and, you know, it's not necessarily how I feel or what am I thinking. No one ever asks me any questions, you know, everyday conversation. So these are the things that we need in relationships. But if we haven't cultivated that when we were growing up, then how exactly are we going to use them successfully in the relationships that we're forming?
Exactly. And even I would say, you know, a key part of why I wanted to talk about this was also because of the external factors that are outside of your home. So, you know, what TV shows did you watch growing up, right? Like, and I think for me, something I've always realized is like, there are maybe 2-3 examples of really strong Black relationships that I was able to get from TV shows, you know, Lisa and Will from Fresh Prince. Well, I think they broke up. I can't remember what happened. That's not even a good example. That was my strongest
example. You know
example.
What? I don't even want to detail what my example was. You know what I mean? You're a little bit younger than me, a little bit younger. So, you know, my example really didn't turn out that well. Like, I was holding fast. It was the Huxtables. What?
No. No. So, I know the Huxtables at least.
Mercy. Like, what do I do now?
Yeah, honestly. And you know, I'm actually shook now that I just remembered that Lisa and Will broke up. Because anyways, going back to my train of thought, but I think this idea of media is super important because I think it helps to fill in some of those gaps. Like, if you don't see, you know, a two-parent relationship, and obviously there's different types of relationships, but let's just pick this as an example. If you don't really see a two-parent relationship in your household, maybe potentially when you turn on the TV, you could see, you know, here's what a healthy relationship could potentially look like, within 30 minutes. And I think what happens in the Black community is because there isn't such high investment in, you know, Black stories and Black love stories, or at least there wasn't a high emphasis placed on it when I was younger, you sort of kind of only see the types of movies on like BET and like, what's that movie with T.I. and Lauren London? I can't remember, but like,
but
these like tumultuous relationships between Black people. So you don't really, at least I didn't really have like a this is the ultimate Black couple that I can see myself in the woman in that relationship. I could see the Black man in that relationship as someone as who I would want to be with, and like, this is the type of person that I want to go after. I think a lot of the times we didn't have those examples. We didn't have those people that we could just point to, because it wasn't something that the Hollywood people were interested in showcasing regularly.
No, they weren't. And even, like I said, as you're thinking back, like you're naming a lot more recent characters that, you know, I have long since, I can't tell when last I watched a BET anything. So,
well, they fell off, so that's their own problem. But yeah.
But like, I mean, even if I'm thinking back, like, you know, we had our role models. Like for me growing up, it was looking at like Whitney Houston. Oh my gosh. When I was growing up, she was amazing. She was beautiful. She was stately. She was everything. And she could sing, you know what I mean? And she was classy. Until when? Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
Right? Bobby Brown came in and that went to hell in a handbasket. Then there was my beautiful Whitney spitting out gum on the stage. I didn't know what to do.
So and you're like, Whitney, why?
Yes, why? You know, and then look at what's happened to those, you know, if we're talking about people in film and media and so forth, right? Who was her love interest? Why is it gonna escape me? The movie that she was in, Bodyguard.
The Bodyguard, yeah.
That's it.
Wasn't it a white guy?
Some That's white right.
guy? I don't know. And he was the only one that could treat her right. Interesting.
Hey, interesting. But what was his role? He wasn't even like a prominent white dude.
He wasn't even the main white dude.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't even, you know. So just really interesting on how those things stick in our minds, and you know, and they form this thing that, you know, we're going to talk about a lot today, and it's expectations, right? It's our expectations. Our expectations, and dare I say, they begin to diminish, right? I hear a lot of that in the room. I'll hear a lot of, well, you know, men cheat, all men cheat. It is what it is. Really? Why is it an expectation? Why is that the norm? And is it a deal breaker? Is it a non-negotiable? Well, I mean, if everybody is going to cheat, then what, you know, how does
then
that
who cares
shape
if my
our,
boyfriend
that's,
cheats?
Exactly. How does that shape the way in which we require to be treated? It destroys us, right? So we definitely have to make that push. I'm so proud, so glad to see things like, you know, we do have Michelle Obama. Oh my. Right? We have Kamala Harris or what have you. And, you know, there are a number of different Black women that we can look to. But the question is that really what's going to stick in our minds and help to form those expectations? It's going to be the families that you're around.
Right. No, and that brings up a really good point around, you know, our expectations are very critical, because once we actually do get into a relationship, that's what we're going to be comparing, right? Like, does this meet my expectations? And if those expectations come from a place of, you know, not really seeing healthy relationships or not being treated properly in previous relationships and not recognizing the issue, right? Like, that could actually help. That could actually hinder you when you're getting into a relationship, to sort of recognize if this is somewhere that feels healthy for you to stay in. And it kind of leads into my next question, which is, you know, how do you know if you're ready to get into a relationship? Like, when should people start thinking, yes, a relationship is the right step that I should take in my life?
I would say I think an important question to ask yourself when you're about to get into a relationship is, what am I bringing to the table? Right? What am I bringing to the table? What am I contributing, or what is my contribution in this relationship? Right? And doing that, you're examining all of the things that you've experienced, right? Are there traumas that you've not dealt with? Are there trust issues? What do your communication gaps look like? So it becomes about spending time to first understand and know who you are, and then examine the present relationships in your life. What do those look like? What is your relationship like with your dad? What is it like with your mom? How are you guys communicating? How are you managing that thing called conflict? Because conflict comes up in everything, but is it an avoidance, or is it something that you are really looking at and you've learned to navigate in a successful, healthy way, right? So asking yourself, what am I bringing to the table, means that you've got to do some introspection, right? We've got to become a little bit more self-aware. And that's another theme that I think a lot of Black women come to in the room. Once again, what do those relationships look like, and have you successfully navigated them? Then when you've answered that question for yourself, and you know, what am I bringing to the table? Because at the end of the day, I think we have to, there has to be a level of confidence that we bring into any relationship. Confidence that, you know what, I'm not just here to take, but here's what I have to give. Does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense.
To give.
And I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh shoot, no, I have so much to give, obviously. I am the table. I saw a meme that's like, hey, what am I bringing to the table? I am the table. I am the table.
And, I rate it.
No, but it's a really good point. Because I think you have to enter relationships, and this is just my uneducated opinion, so please correct, with, okay. with, you know, a really good sense of self, a really good understanding of who you are, what you want out of a relationship, and this understanding that if this relationship ends, I'm still a whole person, I still have value. I don't have to anchor that onto another person fully, because I am complete in myself. And I think once you have that, it makes it a lot easier to navigate and to get yourself out of, you know, relationships that may not be serving you, as opposed to when you start thinking, well, I don't know what I bring to the table, or I don't know what I can contribute to a relationship. And it doesn't mean that you don't contribute anything. It just means that you may not have all the details all squared away in your head.
Hey,
you know? So I think it's really, really important to understand yourself, your values, what you want out of a relationship before you start a relationship, because not all relationships end in, you know, butterflies and rainbows and hearts and kisses, right? So it's an important reality to accept. And it kind of leads me into like a follow-up question, which is, before entering a relationship, or while you're even in a new relationship, how do you sort of heal from these past traumas, not only from romantic relationships, but also from, you know, seeing, having skewed relationships with the people that are, you're meant to be closest with, like your family, your friends, and all that? Like, how do you heal from those other traumas while trying to form a new relationship, if you can even do both at the same time?
Man, this is a tough question. And I'd like to say that people are different, right? People are different. I think that's an important statement here. Recognizing and knowing that there's no cookie cutter sort of, you know, fix all for everyone. And so for some, they need to take that step back and be able to look at what those other aspects are in their lives that may need adjusting, right? And managing their expectations as well. And for others, finding the right person is the fix, right? Finding the right person who can push and pull them into the right direction or show them things could be different. I think that it just depends on the individual. And that's because healing for everyone is different. And so while I think it is a very valid point, like how do you heal from those previous relationships while you're in one? It's recognizing your strengths, right? Recognizing the things that have brought you to this particular space at this point in time. And whether or not, you know, we like to term ourselves, you know, what brokenness do I have? But even within that brokenness, there is strength. There is hope. You have been able to come this far. How have you done it? My goodness. How did you get up this morning? The world was falling down around you, but you got up.
Mm-hmm.
You went to work. You know, just finding those small things that got you from A to B, I think is a good space. And like I said, is it possible for you to be with someone else when, you know, you have so much and you suffered so many different things? I think it's totally possible. I think it just depends on who you are and what you need. For some, you may need a step back. Like I said, you may need to be like, you know what? I cannot do this right now. This is too much.
Yeah.
You
cannot
know,
handle it. Yeah.
I can handle it. It is. And knowing that about yourself and accepting it and just saying, you know, I need time and space to really process what's happening. But like for some people, like for instance, I'm an outside processor. So I process as I'm speaking. Right? I am figuring things out literally as the words are coming out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. I'm listening to myself. I'm hearing what I'm saying. And I can make those adjustments and say, oh, shoot, that doesn't make sense. Or, yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know what? You're right. We should continue in this respect. But for other people, maybe like, say, an introvert, they need time and space away from it all. It becomes too overwhelming. And so they need to sit back and just watch the ride. And let's be honest, I'm the type of person, I can see you ski down the hill,
mm-hmm.
and your ski kind of goes up and you fall and roll all the way down, mm-hmm. and the ambulance comes to pick you up and I'm going to take my skis off. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm just not
like,
going down
skiing
that
is
hill.
Not for me. This is some like, white yeah, people mess.
It's right here. It looks nice, but this is not my path. And so no, you know, and again, it comes with that self-awareness, right? But then you have other people who want to, they have to, they've got to experience it for themselves. And you can talk until the cows come home. They are not going to adjust their stance. They're not going to adjust their thinking because they're thinking that, yeah, that's what your story is. That doesn't have to be my story. I've got to find this out for myself, right? And so when they get in it and things kind of go awry or whatever the case is and they navigate or they don't, that's how they learn. So because we're all so very different, it's hard to say, you know, being in a relationship with somebody is good and it will sort of bring healing, or being out of one and healing from the past or whatever the case is, take the time to yourself. You honestly, you've got to, it becomes about that piece called self-awareness again. You've got to know who you are and how you roll. What do you need in your life, mm-hmm. in order to be successful, to grow, to expand? How do you learn, right? Being aware of that is very important.
And you brought this really good point as well, this idea of self-awareness, but then also, at least in my own relationship, being aware of the other person. You know, it's one thing mm-hmm. that I've learned being with my partner is that I'm just like you, where I'm like, I want to talk about it. I want to sing about it, dance about it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm really, really expressive. I'm very extroverted, and my partner is not. He is mm-hmm. very much so like, I am a very rational person. I need time to process. I need a lot of time to myself, you know? And for me, one thing that I had to do is not only understand that about me, like that I need to talk things through and I need to be able to express myself as much as I can, but that he, like, even after I say everything to him and, like, you know, put it all out there and I'm like, ta-da, he's like, thank you. I need to reflect, you know, and
I love
and
it.
I really love that about him because I feel like it also gives me more time to think about what I just said. Cause like, just like you, like the thoughts are just coming all out at once. So mm-hmm, when he takes a step back, it actually gives me a chance to take a step back. And if before earlier on in our relationship, when I hadn't fully realize that about him, it would cause a lot of tension, at least internally for me, where I was like, oh, I feel like he didn't understand what I said, or like he didn't have an immediate accurate response. So, so that means the problem is still bad, right? Like we're still in it. But then eventually, you know, it just comes with that self-awareness of what do you need. And then once you understand your partner and the way that they express themselves and the way that they process new information, I think that is also really important to take into consideration when you're, you know, maybe running on 10 thinking that there's some big problem and expecting that he, like, the other person's just going to jump on and be like, all right, let's run together.
That's right, it doesn't
work that way.
And this is an example of that excellent self-awareness, and you're bringing that into your relationship, right? Beginning to learn, see, and adapt. Right? Because maybe your expectations were different, but now you're learning that adaptation piece, that this is not the way my partner operates. So I've got to adjust it, right? Managing my expectations within this space. And that's really important. So I think that you hit the nail right on the head, right? Yes, the self-awareness piece is very key, but what these are the things that you will have learned, we hope, in your families of origin, how to navigate conflict, right? How to communicate effectively. I cannot express how important it is to communicate from a congruent space. Congruent meaning I'm responding to the needs of self and then others. But it doesn't mean that I don't respond to others' needs. I first have to know what I need. Right? Be able to communicate that to you, hear and understand what it is that you need from me so that we can find that common space, the common ground that we're working from. But if I can't hear that from you, if I'm unable to communicate effectively, if I have not developed those, you know, thinking from in my family of origin, then how am I going to translate that into my relationship? It's going to be a little bit more difficult. Not impossible, just a little bit difficult.
And it's interesting because if we're thinking about, you know, being in a panoramic or a panacea or a Panera bread, as people like to call the pandemic, it's an interesting time because I think a lot of relationships are actually starting, you know, via Tinder or Bumble or, you know, Hinge or what other apps exist out there. A lot of relationships start online now. And do you think that that has an effect on how relationships are playing out? And when you're thinking about online dating, do you have any sort of advice for people who are navigating that world?
Oh, man. I think that it's a tough world for those who are dating in this day and age, and especially now during the pandemic. I think that it is even more difficult, I would say, at this juncture. I have not ever online dated, and so it's a different realm for me, but just in seeing some friends and, you know, reading some articles and things like that online, I see that, you know, how relationships are formed are, they're very skewed. They're, it's missing that opportunity of, you know, the getting to know you space, right? I think that there are, again, those expectations when you meet someone, and I don't know, like, I don't even understand what these emojis mean. I'm so confused. But
so like, is this like, a threat or is this,
like,
does
what
he
does
like
this
me?
Mean? What is an eggplant? I don't know. I don't know. Is this good or bad? What in the world? Why is a vegetable a part of, hi, how you doing? So
listen, if someone sends you an eggplant,
it's a problem.
I mean, your own, to eat your own, but maybe block them. I don't know.
Okay. Okay. Forward. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate it because I really didn't know. I just threw it out there because I wasn't sure.
Don't worry. I got you. We can talk more about, this is a family friendly show, but we can talk more about that after.
I appreciate it. I needed some guidance. So yeah, when you're dealing with online dating, I think that it has to be about asking the right questions, right? And then the thing is, how do you trust who you're speaking to? You know, is this person legit? Are their intentions clear, pure, whatever? So I think it's just going to have to be more so about safety, I would say. I have a young daughter and I wouldn't like to see somebody taking advantage of her.
With the panoramic in full speed and variants popping up from every country like COVID whack-a-mole, there has never been a greater reliance on online dating apps to make romantic connections. Tinder, Bumble, Grindr, Hinge, and other apps have created the ability for people looking for a relationship to quickly select individuals they are interested in and hopefully have those feelings be reciprocated. However, these apps have a long-standing history in breeding discrimination and fetishization of Black people. In regards to discrimination, some users of these apps have felt the need to highlight their racist ideologies front and center in their bios. The gay dating app Grindr circa 2010 had members indicating racial preferences, placing things like no fats, no femmes, no blacks, no Asians right in their profiles. This caused a large amount of app users to confront these racists to remove themselves from the app and condemning their actions. It also sparked campaigns like Kinder Grindr, which was released with a focus on highlighting the importance of inclusivity in the LGBTQIA+ community. However, this is not a problem that is solely faced by Grindr. Other dating apps have faced similar challenges. And prior to what I call the Great Awakening of 2020, popular dating apps often adopted ethnicity filters, a feature allowing people to screen out potential mates based on their identified ethnicity. I have two schools of thought on ethnicity filters. The first is that they can be a helpful way for minority group members to find and bond with one another, ensuring that they will connect with someone who is less likely to be racist towards them. In this way, they create a greater opportunity for minorities to be successful in the dating world if matching with someone of similar background is their goal. The second is that this could actually lead to increased instances of fetishization. If you are a Black person listening to this, I am sure you can recall a time where you were propositioned specifically because you were Black. It's not a great feeling, and it's one that makes you feel objectified and reduced to the color of your skin. For Black women in particular, white men have often opened conversations on these apps with things like, "Hey, dark chocolate," or "I've never been with a Black woman before," or "You're pretty for a dark-skinned girl." These ethnicity filters can reduce the playing field for these predators and make it easier for them to find and harass Black women. This creates feelings of extreme discomfort for Black women and makes it harder for them to openly allow themselves to form meaningful relationships from these apps. So I don't know what the right solution is, to be honest. Having filters or not, I really, really don't. I think overall, these apps have to do a better job at removing individuals who perpetuate racism, sexism, ableism, and all the other isms that make people feel unsafe. If you're using a dating app, please make sure that you're taking the right precautions before meeting up with people in real life. And I'm not just talking about masking, but ensuring that other people know where you're going, who you're meeting with, and that this is taking place in a public environment. Because it is really not safe in these streets sometimes, so we must do our best to protect ourselves from potential predators.
So if I were an online dater, I'm not. I've been married for, oh my gosh, I'm old. Shh, don't tell me. Been married for almost 22 years now. I got married at 24 and we're still going, thank God.
Congrats.
But thank you. If I were to think back into those moments, these are some of the questions. Like, I chose my husband because of what I observed in his home.
Mm-hmm.
I was his mom and dad, they cook together, you know, they're cutting up stuff. I didn't have that growing up.
Mm.
But I saw that and I was like, definitely, I want this.
This is good. That. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. Right. And if he's seeing this and how they cook together and operate together, then this is a good thing, because then he can understand and know what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is somebody who's going to do things with me. That's one of my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be by myself and do everything by myself. And I've had that. My mom's done that. I saw that life. I'm not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is what I'm looking for. So when you're talking to these online cats, that's what I would do. I would start to ask them about their families. I would ask them, you know, what are their relationships like with their families, with their, who's their role model? I don't think that's the question that's being passed around when you're sending me your emojis. I don't think that that's really what they're looking at.
I don't think that's what the eggplant means, no.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I think it's a good jump off, right? It's a good jump off to get to understand and know somebody. And let's be honest, do we ever really know anyone, right? No, because we're all changing. We're all growing, right? But it's a good place to start. And it's a good place to even begin to understand and know. Before I saw that, I didn't have an example of how a Black family could be. But because I saw it, then it changed my thinking. What? This is real life?
This happens? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do this. This is the life I want to live. Thank you. Check, please.
You know, it's funny. I'm thinking about, you know, my friend group. And like, if I were to advise my friends, you know, some of those key questions that you said that should be asked, like, you know, what was your relationship with your parents? And did you spend a lot of time as a family growing? And it's funny because I don't know how many people are really going to heed that advice, even though I think it's great advice. And here's why, because I think in this day and age, thinking about my specific generation, people who are around somewhere ballpark 20, 25, 26, it's almost like you want to play this game of who cares the least, because you don't want to seem overly invested. Like, I know a lot of girls and boys, quite frankly, and whoever, people who will text the person back the same amount of time it took them to text them back. So it's like, you took 10 hours, I'm gonna take 10 hours. Okay. Or I'm gonna take 20 hours to show you that I actually care 50% less than you care. So it's like, how, so in this is like the reality, at least I think, maybe I just am associated with crazy people, but this is the reality.
No, I think people got some knowledge. I definitely think you got some knowledge there, and you could be right. You could be right.
With that context of these people who don't even want to show that they care about how your day went, like, how do they start having those conversations around, like, so what's your take on monogamy? You know, like, how do you sort of have those deeper conversations when sort of the starting point for so many people?
I like that you've asked the question. And then my question in return is, what do you require?
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for? It depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a hookup, then by all means, then that only makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you are looking for a serious, committed relationship, if you're looking the long haul, that one and done, then you're going to have to operate differently. Then you're going to have to figure out, what do I require? Because the minute I text you, what is your relationship with your family members like, with your dad, who was your role model, da 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 da, and you can't answer those questions, then I need to cut you off, because you are not what I require. And I think that's the biggest thing I'm hoping that the Black women who are listening to this will get from this podcast. I'm hoping that we will begin to raise our requirements. What is your requirement?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has to be passed down from us, the ones who have a little bit more experience, right? A little bit more knowledge. We've got to start to talk to them differently. Like, no. If they send you this message, this is not acceptable.
No bueno. This is not what you should be looking for. Yeah.
That's not, if I come out of the car and you can't hold the door open for me and the door slams in front of me when I'm walking through the mall, maybe not. I'm gonna throw up my deuces, and as a matter of fact, I'm gonna have my Vex money and I'm gonna take my cab home. My Uber, excuse me, we don't cab anymore. My Uber, right?
Yeah.
Because that's not what I require. And that changes the narrative, because then that forces Black men to really start to treat us differently. Any man differently. You can't treat me like that. That's not acceptable, right? So I think it just changes the narrative. I think we have to begin to start to set a standard. Because if we don't have one, then we're going to fall for anything. I don't think that's been working.
Yeah, because then you get in these relationships and then ultimately, you know, they fail, whether it's because
that's right,
you are not aware about what you need. You haven't done the work in terms of figuring out what your expectations are. But regardless, a conflict will arise and you won't be able to get over that conflict. So what are some of the main reasons you've seen in your practice as to why relationships, and maybe specifically Black relationships, tend to fail? And what are some ways that we can combat these typical reasons for failure?
I think it's generally the usual, right? A lot of these relationships fail because our expectations, like we said, effective communication, keen self-awareness, right? And if you need something, you need to ask for it. Conflict resolutions, those are all things that come into the therapy room. Believe it or not, finances, family and friends are a big one. Family and friends, right? Learning how to navigate those relationships, especially when your family doesn't really like your spouse or your partner. That's a huge one. And how are we going to combat these reasons? I'm going to say check in. All right, check in. Mm-hmm. Gather that knowledge of self. Figure out who you are, who you need to be. What are you bringing to the table? And then wash, rinse, repeat. Wash, rinse, repeat. It becomes about managing those expectations, learning how to effectively navigate that conflict, and learning how to listen and not be understood. Like, you know, we seek to understand, not be understood. Mm-hmm. It's very important, because when you have an understanding about something, it changes the narrative. What the heck is there to argue about? Nothing.
Yeah, it gives you the context. Oh, that's not what they meant at all.
Okay. Then, you know, and you can agree to disagree, and that's okay. But when you don't understand and you're arguing, it's back and forth, and it's like, well, this and that, and I've said this, and you'd be surprised. Oh my gosh, so many people, they don't communicate effectively. Not at all. They don't really understand that.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember where I heard this, but it was this idea that in a relationship, you actually communicate a lot, right? Like, even when you're not speaking. And sometimes it's in that nonverbal communication where a lot of problems arise. So, like, let's say you are angry at your partner, they said something to you, and you're just like, I can't believe they would say that. But instead of being like, hey, I can't believe you said that, or when you said that, I felt like this, it's like, well, I'm just gonna, you get to see my back all night, and you're not gonna, there's no cuddles, like, you don't get to have access to me, or I'm gonna be angry or have an attitude. And like, for the other person, they're getting the communication from you that there's a problem or there's hostility, but you haven't actually genuinely communicated with them. But I think in that breakdown between you not saying anything and your actions, like they can now come up with their own hypothesis of as to why you're feeling that way, which might lead to more problems. So effective communication is important because you are communicating, but it's just not effective.
That's correct. 100%. What you're describing is what, you know, John Gottman calls stonewalling, right? And stonewalling is actually emotional abuse. We don't really, really think of it like that, but it is, because it does not provide the other person the opportunity to be heard, right? Mm-hmm. And you tell me one single human being that doesn't want to be heard. I don't know. I don't know of any. It's important for us to be heard. So when you are not providing that safe space to be heard, it creates a great divide. Rejection, hurt, all of the above, abandonment, everything that you can mm-hmm. think of starts to occur within that space. So being able to effectively communicate, which is, you know, Virginia Satir calls it congruent communication. And that's what I was saying, when it's that ability to communicate, to respond to the needs of self and then mm-hmm. others, right? Because if I'm using that as my benchmark, right? Or I'm trying to get into that space, the best way to do it is I'm being able to say, hey, listen, I didn't like it when you rolled your eyes like that. You know, it made me feel diminished. It made me feel like what I'm saying is unimportant. I'd like it when you speak to me. If you really are upset about something that I'm saying, maybe you want to take 5 minutes and come back to this conversation. Like you would say, how, you know, your partner is like, you know what? I need a minute. I'm hearing you. I've listened to what you had to say, but give me a minute. Let me process that. Mm-hmm. So if you need a minute to go and emotionally regulate, go then do so. But come back to the table. Very important that you come back to the table. So some of these things that we're seeing within the room, and you said something a little bit earlier, we talked about it a little bit, when you started to talk about, you know, how we focus on what we need, you know, oh, I'm not getting what I need, and the next person is not giving me what I need, and need, me.
That's actually the dialogue in my head constantly, me.
You know, and we listen, we live in that space. You only live once, right? YOLO. We live in that realm right now. If it feels good, do it, right? But I think we need to tap in, not just inward, but outward. Outward meaning spiritually, like community. Like, you know, globally, all of these things. If we were to really begin to expand our understanding, our knowledge about ourselves in this thing called planet Earth, mm-hmm. you know, in this thing called the universe, and how small Earth is in comparison to all of these other planets, and is there life out there, and all of this. If we were beginning to expand our thinking to everything and not just ourselves, mm-hmm. this particular home, our relationship, all of those pieces, then our worldview would change. How we operate within our homes would change. Our thoughts about ourselves would expand and change. Begin to that exploration. Can I put myself in the other person's shoes, in that other perspective? How would that change the way I think about what they're saying to me? Mm-hmm. So those are some of the pieces that when I'm talking about self-awareness, I'm talking about those pieces as well.
A bigger piece, yeah.
Yes.
And you know, it's interesting because I really liked what you said about expanding your world. And that's something I've actually been trying to do even myself, like during this pandemic. And one thing that I've seen other people do, like others or people in my life, my friends who I'm super close with do is sort of in this time, like in this pandemic, it feels like your world is so small. Like my world is my bedroom. Like, you know, my world is my bedroom. And then the office that I work in and in the same house.
Right.
And also the kitchen and then the backyard. So it's like, it feels like everything is like really, really, really caving in on me, or at least on people in during this time, because we're so restricted, we can't go any. I hope people aren't going anywhere, because, you know, I want this pandemic to end. So everyone, if you're listening, masks, gloves,
please,
hand sanitizers, I'm sick of this. Anyways,
be safe.
So it feels like your world is sort of small, which could actually make it really easy for you to fall into, so not the first relationship that maybe an old relationship, or a relationship that might not be serving you, but you're like, well, it's a pandemic and my world is so small, so who cares? I might as well just be with that person. And this is something I've heard people say, like, you know, where am I going to find someone, you know? And it kind of leads me to this other point that I wanted us to sort of close with, which is this idea of, how do you now live single? Like, how do you take off this pressure that society has put on us to find a relationship? And not even society, to be honest, it's you know, our aunts being like, so when are you going to find a husband? Or, you know, like everyone's sort of telling us, like, get in a relationship, find love, like, you need someone to be complete. Like, how do you sort of stop all of that outside pressure and allow yourself to do what feels right?
Whoo, man, I don't know. It's loaded. Like, it's, you know, the problems of the world. Will they be solved today?
I hope so.
I mean, how do you combat that societal pressure? I think it's important for you to just, you know, really stay present, especially now during this pandemic, and look, like you said, continue to look beyond yourself, continue to look at other things, you know, join different groups, I would say, and see what else is out there, kind of thing. And when I say join different groups, I mean, not just in Canada, but I mean, if you can speak a different language, what are they doing in Scotland? Like, how are they managing? What's happening over there? You know what I mean? Getting curious and beginning to explore other cultures, other ways of thinking, different things like that, like beginning to expand your own mind as well, I think is very helpful. Because once you start to, you know, self-actualize, once you start to take in more information, then you'll begin to see that. I mean, I think New Zealand supposedly has like very few cases. I'm not exactly sure how many.
I don't think they have any. I think they're international ones. Yeah, yes, something like that.
Something to that effect, right? So, I mean, taking that time and maybe joining an online group that talks about what's happening over there in New Zealand. Let's read some news. Let's see what's happening elsewhere outside of here. Mm-hmm. Our mind is very powerful. It is more powerful than we give it credit. And I'll say this. At the start of the year, a thing came out, you know, that comes in your email, especially when you go to certain sites and so forth. It came out that about a visualization technique, which I thought was really interesting. And what it asked you to do is envision yourself on December 31st, 2021, and envision all of the things that you want to have happened within this year, and how you want to be. What would you be saying on that day? What would you be doing? How are you celebrating those things? And I, you know, I took the challenge and I sent it to some of my friend groups as well as my therapy groups as well. And I said, what if we all just took this visualization exercise, you know? And some of the pieces that I started to think about in terms of who I wanted to be at the end of this pandemic and what I had hoped to see and what growth that I wanted to expect as well. Can you believe it's February 1st? No, sorry, it's February 14th. Yeah. By the time this comes out, February 14th. Yeah. And I am beginning to see some of those things manifest itself. I'm beginning to see some of those pieces coming together. I can see how things are beginning to shift and change, even in my own little world. And
hopeful.
Very hopeful. Very hopeful. Because I'm like, if we can begin to visualize something different, you know, I think that we can begin to mitigate and manage our emotions, our expectations, the people that we want to be with, all of that, because then we have a better understanding of what we require, which I think is super important when you're talking about, you know, how do they navigate what, you know, where do I want to be, whatever, all of these kind of things. At the end of the day, I think it's going to be about how are you really adjusting? So expand your world. That's one. So expand it from just the bathroom to the kitchen to the, you know, continue to reach out in the means in which you can, which is online presently, because we're in this pandemic here. When things open up a bit more, you know, social distance, but social distance in a healthy way. You know, you go and have a driveway chat, you know what I mean? Talking to somebody else or what have you, when we're able, you can connect online with so many people. This is one of the greatest experiences. When have we ever had this opportunity to connect so vastly with other people from all over and so simply right from our homes, right? There are so many different ways that we can tap in, but it becomes about you becoming an explorer, an adventurer of sorts, and utilizing this time to really grow and tap in.
Yeah, and I love that. And I think, you know, if this is a time for people to, you know, maybe by force singleton, by force being single, it's a good time to have that reflection, to expand your world beyond your bedroom, to see what other places are like. You know, I feel like never has there been a time where people are spending so much of their time alone, right? And like not seeing new people every single day. So using this time to do that virtually and to do that exploration, I think will be really beneficial for people who are like, well, I don't want a relationship and the person I want to work on is me. And here are some really great ways to do that. So really love that. And I think it'll resonate really well with a lot of the listeners who are like, my life does not begin and end with a relationship. You know, I am a whole ass person who has things that they want to do, and I'm going to focus on that. And if I get into a relationship, nice, cool. If I don't, well, I'm still a whole person, you know? So I really loved what you said there about expanding that world and making that not realization, but making yourself into somebody who isn't being pulled solely based off of the desire to have a relationship. And so thank you so much. We've been talking, you know, at length. I think it's been such a great discussion. I have learned so much personally. I was like, on mute, like taking notes. Just wanted to make sure that you are able to send a message to all of the lovely Black women who are listening right now. If you had something to say to them, you know, what would you want to say to them to close out our time together?
I think it's been an awesome time as well. So I think I want to say to all of our Black women, I want to say, I think one of the most important things I hope that you're going to remember is, what do you require? What do you require of yourself? And what do you require of others? And when you've answered that question, the next question is, what do you bring into the table? Because we all have to show up to the table. So the question is, when you walk in that room of whomever it may be, whether you walk in as a couple or you walk in on your own, what do you bring to the table?
I love that. I love that. And I think it almost summarizes our whole conversation, really. So I really hope that people learned a lot. I know I personally did, and were able to gain something from this conversation. Thank you again for stopping by, and really appreciate you being on the show. So that's it for this episode of Black Girl Galaxy. Thank you for sticking it through to the end. I know it was a longer episode, but I really think that everything Nadine had to say will benefit you, your relationship with yourself, and your relationship with others. Share this episode with a Black woman or anyone who you think might benefit from some of the lessons learned. And follow the podcast on Instagram at Black Girl Galaxy Podcast to see more resources, to see some great posts that I make about Black female artists, ways for you to take care of your mental health, and all that good stuff. So I will see you in the next episode of Black Girl Galaxy. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.